Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Okay, I want to get to that PIAA comment from Dr. Lombardi in a moment and get Sean's take on it. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. It's not a bunt single. It's a bunt double.
The 1-1 pitch for the bunt. It's down third baseline with the base hit, and he might go for two. He's going to try for two, and he's going to make it a stand-up double on a bunt.
How about that? How about that? Okay. So that's Mike Shannon with the call on the Cardinals radio network. So I'll be frank with you, I've not looked at the proposal that closely. I think in part because, well, A, time, but also I don't. Because of what I'm doing with Penn State, I'm always looking at what's happening on, quote, my level. And, of course, I'll look at the pro level, too. So I don't look as often. But I've talked about the playoffs before, that you have six. I was not in favor of going from four classifications to six, but they did it. Okay. Well, since you've done it, now take advantage of it. Take your public schools, go A, double A, triple, quad A. Right? And then to take the other two classifications, still keep six championship games, smaller charter and private schools, larger charter and private schools in the other classification, and you end up with six champions like you do now. I know it's simplistic, but I think everyone knows listening to the show, that's what I am. But he was talking about the district playoffs, so I don't know what's completely in this bill. Here's what bothers me. What bothers me about the district playoffs is that I think you need to qualify properly for a district playoff. I remember one year here, Mifflin County was in the playoff, and they were 1-9. You haven't qualified for postseason. Show some pride. Turn it down. York Catholic seems to make it all the time. Bishop Guilfoyle seems to make it all the time. Archbishop Wood seems to make it all the time. Newman Goretti seems to make it all the time. You know what I mean? All the time. I mean, Pittsburgh Central Catholic. Okay. I think, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate here for a moment. Okay. And that is, I think that's what's concerning some people. That's why I say you've got, you know, if you have six now, there's a way of making six work while doing the split. But he's talking about district playoffs. And my problem has always been with the district playoffs. Always has been. I'm sorry. If you're under 500, right? I don't care. You know, I could have 10 coaches call here and yell at me about this if they want. And I'll tell them the same answer at the same time. You haven't done enough to qualify if you're not over 500. If you're not 500 or better, you have no business being in a playoff. None. And some of these are forced and manufactured. We're going to take four teams. And like one of them is like, what are you wasting my time for? I mean, that's my problem. That's where the extension problem happens. The extension problem happens when you've got teams just being a filler because you mandated how many teams are in your district playoff. And I thought one of the better things that we saw this year was Shikellamy saying no. What was Shikellamy, 1-9?
Yes.
And they could have played, I want to say, Selins Grove? Who could they have played?
It was either Selins Grove or Midwest. It was one of the two. I thought, well, right. Midwest, then.
And they said no.
It was one of the teams. The 5 seed then moved up to the 4. So, yeah, it was Midwest. Selwyn's Grove was the opening round for districts.
Well, like, somebody will be 4-6 when the district playoffs. First of all, I sit there and go, what are you doing? To me, you've got to earn a record to get yourself to a district playoff. I mean, you know, it's interesting. People complain about how many teams are in the NCAA tournament. They complain about how many, you know, obviously everybody. Now, obviously I'm in something where everybody makes, but that's, you know, in a conference tournament. Okay. And obviously I've done games where Penn State's been below 500. I mean, I just did one this year. Penn State was, 14-17 on the year, played the opening round against Minnesota, lost. But the district playoffs, I think that's eating up time. I don't mind a district playoff. That doesn't bother me. District playoff's fine. But there are certain teams that should not be in. I mentioned Mifflin County one year. Mifflin County was 1-9. Like, 1-9. And they're going to play. You're going to play. What good is that going to do you? Just like people complain about the 5-7 teams in bowl games. Was there three of them? 2 years ago? 3 years ago? And I completely understand that. Completely get that. And remember that. You remember that year I picked all three of them to win. And the reason I picked all three of them to win is I thought that the opponent would be sitting there saying, I don't really. We don't really need to play them. We're not motivated enough. And that was my theory. And it turned out that all three of the 5-7 teams won. So they all ended up 6-7. But when it comes to the district playoffs, starting earlier now, so the first game of the season will be Friday night, August 23rd, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Instead of starting August 30, this is what, the fourth year now they've done this?
That sounds about right. Yeah, three or four. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It was always the Friday night going into Labor Day weekend. That was always a traditional start.
So August 23rd they start. Okay. I'm all right with that. And then the season ends, I want to say Halloween week. So the last game of the season would be October 31 or October 24.
Or the last Friday in October. Correct.
So 31. 31? No. Actually, October 25th is the last Friday off the top of my head. You're going to have to look this up. But I want to say October 25th is the last Friday in October.
That's correct. So, yeah, first round of districts then would start.
And you doubted me? And you doubted me? You doubted me?
No.
I'm just kidding. Then you start the district playoffs after that. And you can go, 2 weeks of that?
That's right.
So now you're November 1, November 9.
At least with District 4 Quad A would be 2 weeks, just since there's only, you know, five or six teams. But the classification below with Lewisburgs and, you know, the Loyal Sox of the world and, you know, Southern Columbia's, they take an extra since you have eight teams involved.
See, but you got to just go with four. I'm sorry. Four. You didn't win enough to get there. I mean, what does that do? I don't understand what that does going to eight teams. What does that do?
There's actually well over a dozen teams in that classification with Lewisburg and Loyal Sock and Central Columbia, Southern Columbia. So there are quite a few teams that in that class, they don't make the cut in AAA, District 4 AAA.
Go with four.
Now, like with Quad A, they just jump right into the district semifinals in week one.
Fine. That's what they should do in every classification. Now, if you, you know, so to win AAA, you have to play three extra games. I remember I was talking with George Landis a couple of years ago. Jack and I were talking with George. And I want to say at the time, he might have been coaching CD East, I think, something like that. And so Jack looked over, he said, so would you have a playoff game last night? He goes, yeah, it's our first playoff game. It was last night. He says, how many more are you going to win? A couple more to win the state championship? He goes, no, five more. So in other words, you play 10 regular season games and six postseason games? You end up with a 16-game schedule if you go to the championship game? 16 games? Really? This is high school. This is high school. The NFL plays 16 games. College football plays 12 of the bowl game 13. You got teams playing 16 games on the high school level? And that's because, no offense to the AAA people here, but I'm sorry. You're going to tell me teams 5 through 8 are, here we go? No. Dave Hamilton, who is the who is currently in charge of sports performance at Penn State. You know, they put the chips in the to gather data in the uniforms. Dave is going to be leaving. He's taking a job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I talked to Dave today. And Dave was talking to Jack Hamm and me on the plane a year ago. And he was showing us data that in the past, let's just use 100 as the top out number, okay? Let's be fair. If you go from preseason the way it used to be, the graph goes down, and mid-October to November, it takes a dramatic downturn. Penn State has changed its practice regimen both in preseason, in season, but also how they approach games. And the graph on fatigue with this approach starts at 100 and gradually it still goes down because there's so much wear and tear. But it gradually goes down, but nowhere near to the cratering of the old method because of proper usage. How many of these guys are playing two ways in high school football, Sean? How many are playing two ways?
Quite a few for sure.
And you're now asking them to play a couple of extra games?
Very rare that you hear about a high school player that only sticks with one side of the field, one side of
right.
the ball.
And now you're going to ask them, instead of playing, let's just say you win your district and you get to the first round, you're asking them to play 13 games. 13 games. And if they win that, now you're at 14 games. Look, I loved playing games. That was the best part of it. But it's all the practice you got to go through. And at the same time, the fatigue. Yeah, your conditioning is good, but your conditioning is not as good as it is on a college level. It's not as good as it is on a professional level, even though the people at the high school level do a very good job. But I think, you know, Tony in Shamokin. Hi, Tony. How are you? Great to hear from you.
Hey, good afternoon. When I was in high school, our last four games, this is Shamokin High, when we were good. Our last four games of the season were Pottsville, Berwick, Shikellamy. Berwick, and Mont Carmel. We always played Mont Carmel on Thanksgiving. Then the first Saturday in December was the championship game, Eastern Conference. If you were the champs, you were 12-0, if you were lucky enough to win them all. And very few teams did win them all. And, I mean, people were more than happy with that. A few years ago, Shamokin went to the playoffs. I don't know if they won one game or they won three games. And they played an undefeated Clearfield team and beat them. I mean, that stuff is, I don't know. I like the old, I like everything older, I guess.
Well, okay. First of all, I am with you in a lot of ways on that. As you know, I think you've heard me say on the show many times, Tony, sometimes less is more.
Yeah.
And I think that they're pushing this too far, and my concern now is actually for the student athletes, not just the system itself, because I've learned a lot more about sports performance in the last 3 or 4 years because of a guy like David Hamilton, who's now taking the job with Tampa Bay, with the Bucks, about fatigue. Well, every athlete at the end of the year, as you know, Tony, now, you probably weren't banged up at the end of the year. You were, of course, a superior.
Oh, yeah.
Superior
heard
specimen.
About that if you're mentioning it.
I know you don't like to brag. I'll do it for you.
The story gets better with age.
Right.
But
as we all know, all of us who played any sport at any time, at the end of the year, you're hurting. You're banged up.
Yeah. Yep.
And yet they keep asking these, let's just keep on football for a moment. They keep asking you to play more.
15 to 16 high school football games is way too much. I mean, the end of the football season, we're ready to play basketball or wrestle, whatever you did. Back then, a state champion was 17 and 18 and 0 in wrestling. You didn't wrestle 40 matches. And then it was on the track and field or whatever you wanted to play, baseball.
Yes. Yeah, you know, I mean, you go out, you play football, you play basketball or wrestle, and then you run track or play baseball in the spring.
Yeah. Obviously, I held the first discus record at Shamokin. The first year we had track, I was the first one to throw the discus, so I held the first record.
Tony, you've always had the ability to beat the system.
But I mean, we've got to play everything.
Yeah.
15 football games is way too many high school football games.
Yeah. I mean, I remember one year in high school we played 10, and the next year we played 9. The other team was afraid to play us. So we're such a juggernaut. But at the end of the year, our last game was on Thanksgiving Day. We had two high schools in my town, so we played our crosstown rival on Thanksgiving. And it was good enough. Not one of us thought about playing in the state playoff. And the team I was on my senior year, we were a very good team. But we didn't think about, gee, I wish we could play for the state championship.
A state championship never even entered our mind. We wanted to win the Eastern Conference. If not, we wanted to beat Mont Carmel.
Right. And we wanted to be, in our case, was Enrico Fermi. Right? Now, I mean, one old guy that could split the atom, I mean, I thought our chances were good.
But he was Italian, so your chances weren't that good.
Tony, uh-huh.
But, I mean, to me, our Thanksgiving game at Mont Carmel, I mean, James Michener wrote about it in his book, Sports in America. We would get 10, 12,000 people there.
Yes, that's
everybody.
We got 10,000 people. Yep.
And today we're lucky. I mean, you want our stadium. You're lucky if there's 2,000 people there.
Yeah.
For the Mont Carmel game.
Yep. It's a shame.
It is a shame, and I think we've lost a lot, and the kids lost a lot. I mean, the furthest we traveled to play a football game was Pottsville.
Yeah.
That's as far as we went. Of course, it was the best football in the state, but, I mean, we know that.
Right, well, of course.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the way you felt. If you don't feel that way, why bother?
Right, exactly. No, I agree with you.
I just think we lost a lot, and I think they just played too much, and it's taken away from the kids.
It's always when things get... I don't mind having state championships. That's great. There's a lot of pride in it. No question about it. But I think at the same time, it's got to be regulated a bit better and smarter so that you're, I don't know, that you're not putting filler into the playoffs.
Well, like that Clearfield team that lost to Shamokin and won one football game. They shouldn't have been in a playoff. Why they
won? Of course not. Of course not.
How do you think that team they probably built up for a couple years for that team.
Yeah.
And like you said, how do you get up for 1-19?
You can't. I mean, that's the...
No.
Yeah.
Oops, Tony, I got another call.
I'm not surprised. Your fan club won't let you alone.
Hey, have a great day, guys.
You too. Tony Knopp, next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
It's been a great spring at Sunbury Motors Kia, and they want to keep the strong momentum going into summer with the Summer Sticker Sales Event.
I want to see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Summer is our favorite season, and you'll agree with these great deals. Lease a 2019 Kia Forte LXS for just $199 a month for only 36 months with $1,600 total due at signing. Save over $6,000 on a 2019 Sereno LX, now just $27,301. There's $5,000 in savings on a 2019 Kia Sportage, now only $21,901. Plus, get 0% APR financing for 66 months on select 2019 models. And all Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, making it the best summer ever at Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Financing through KMF. Lease term is 3 months. 10,000 miles per year. $1,600 total due signing or equivalent trade. No security deposit required. Tax and tax extra. Offer expires 6/30/19. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let's get right to it. The incomparable Tony Knopp is with us. As fine a guest as anybody's going to get. Tony, welcome. Always a pleasure, my friend. I hope you're well.
Everything's going great. Hope it's well by you guys. I hear there's been no sunshine for the end of June for you guys.
We will turn the corner, and when it happens, it will be dramatic.
We're hoping so, too. That's the whole selling point for Los Angeles, and I'm watching the Kauai Parade, and it's sunny and beautiful in Toronto. It's 61 and raining here. You know, it's all turned around.
It's obvious where you should stay, then.
Right.
What does it say about the NBA in particular? And this does happen in baseball, too, with Scott Boras. That an agent like Rich Paul can have some of the leverage that he does have with a client.
It will be very interesting to see what happens with the NBA's collective bargaining agreement the next time it comes up in a few years here. One, because the agents and the players have so much power because of the seemingly lopsided effect that a superstar has on a team. But at the same time, you know, you have this salary cap that's based on revenues, and that revenue formula is outdated. Right? That revenue formula was put together when the Golden State Warriors were selling for $400 million in 2012, or when Donald Sterling, you know, had the Clippers, you know, valued at $150 million, and they ended up selling for $2.1 billion. So you have this really interesting circumstance now where the talent pool is getting a lot deeper, the players are getting a lot more powerful, and then you have people on both sides of the analytics spectrum saying, because, you know, baseball's got a totally different problem, but on both sides of the analytics spectrum saying, it's a superstar-driven league, and then others saying, well, is it really a superstar-driven league? Because in the NBA Finals, for the last five games, none of the starters were top five picks.
Right.
So what it does to the league is they're going to have a really interesting and maybe nasty conversation in collective bargaining in 2 years, because these owners have gotten paper wealthy to the point where you have the Warriors saying, we'll just pay the quadruple repeater tax and have a $400 million payroll when the salary cap's 118. And now I'm reading that the Sixers, Bucks, and Raptors are considering doing it. And you and I know where that goes. Where that ends up is you have eight teams that are going for it and everybody else just tanking.
Right. And, in fact, Toronto, one step further. They did not have a single lottery pick on the roster.
No, and the interesting thing for them is even in that scenario, so they've built it the way that you believe the league would want them to build it, right? They have a lot of guys who didn't move around in free agency. Marc Gasol got traded from the Lakers to the Grizzlies, and then he gets traded to the Raptors. Kawhi Leonard, you know, even though he can't supermax because he, you know, doesn't have 10 years of service, but he was traded from the Spurs to the Raptors. Now we both know that he kind of held out and forced the trade. But so now you have this team. You have two totally polar opposite teams, and it's exactly what we were just saying, where the Golden State Warriors have a super high-cost free agent that came in, and they brought in DeMarcus Cousins on the mid-level. Then you have the Raptors who are built right, and both of them really only have like a two-year window before this becomes economically unfeasible for them. So is that what the NBA is becoming now? Like, I've got this five-year window, and then after that, I got to dump everything and rebuild for 5 years. Is that really what the league wants? And it's so fascinating because I don't know how they're going to figure it out. Because if you're the players, you're going to say, you know what, the salary cap should extend into the G League team. And if we're going to be in a situation where guys like DeJounte Murray or Jamal Murray or guys are going to show up that are going to be superstars that we didn't know were going to be superstars, we need to have the money, the resources, and the allocation to be able to do that with our minor league system.
Right.
So right, it is so going to be about, this Kawhi Leonard thing will be so fascinating. And Rich Paul has started it all off by saying, we demand to go here.
Right. And they got what they wanted. You're talking about money and resources.
Well, the hard thing about it is if you're in New Orleans now, you just picked up three first-round picks. I thought, look, I live in Lakerland. I'm not a Laker fan. It's an awfully steep price to pay. LeBron's going to be 40. And, look, if you look at the dynasties for the last 20 years, the only one that's lasted longer than 5 years has been the Spurs. And that is an outlier of a situation where you have a superstar in Tim Duncan who took less money and wants to be in a small market. But every other dynasty, the early Lakers, the Lakers again in 2010, the Celtics with the big three, the Heat with the big three, and the Warriors, all at year five, broke apart.
Right. It's obviously been more money. You talked about the Clippers going for $150 to $2.1
billion. Oh, man.
All right, which is remarkable. TV contracts are very high in every sport. Labor is very high in every sport. You talk about what it costs to go to a Laker game. Is there a concern in your business when you talk to the corporate partners that there's a line that they're starting to skirt with that won't send the markets higher?
It's interesting what we see with the companies. We just talked about how in Europe, I actually didn't draw the analogy, but the danger that the NBA has and that the MLB has already found themselves in is that you have a collection of teams that are actively going for it and the vast majority that are not. You have haves and have-nots. And North America is trying to create a system where that there's an interchange between those, right? So it's tough to say that for 5 years you're good and then 5 years you're bad, but the alternate universe is European soccer where it's literally the same five teams every year for 30 years.
Right.
I think the same analogy is starting to be true on the corporate side. You have really big players on the corporate side who are so forward-thinking about how they're investing in sports and live events, and they know that that's what the boomers like to spend their discretionary income on, and it's what the millennials spend all of their income on. So you get these brands, like we have a lot of them here, like Anheuser-Busch and Verizon and MGM Resorts, who are doing everything they can to just get fully, deeply integrated into the actual event itself, right? And, you know, so for MGM Resorts, that means your experience in Vegas carries forward to your experience when you're placing bets at the Capital One Center in D.C. Capital One's another one of our customers, and the D.C. Right. Monumental Sports, which owns the Wizards, they're partners of ours. And they're creating this whole thing where we're going to know where Steve Jones is, and we want to know where he is, what he's spending, what he bets on, what he buys, and what he doesn't. And what's happening there is it's leaving less room for the have-nots, right? So 20 years ago, you had, you know, Larry Smith's construction company was a big partner, and that's still the case in college a lot. Those guys and girls are getting pushed out a little bit or not as incentivized to spend because of how this is starting to matriculate into the consumer spend. So you know, the reality is, you know, Darren Revell spoke for us years ago from ESPN at one of our conferences, and his theory was we're going to see smaller venues, and the majority of the venues are actually going to be controlled by brands. So it's going to be like the Samsung right. deck at Capital One Arena, and they're going to control the tickets for that deck. And right. I don't know if that's too far off from where we're headed, to be honest.
Well, it's interesting because you and I have talked about smaller venues before, that it makes more sense, especially in a TV world. But you have a lot of TV contracts coming up for play. The new commissioner of the Big Ten is going to have to deal with one in 2022. They'll be the first ones up in college. The NFL's coming up, which is right around the time they have to have the collective bargaining agreement done. So my question is, when it comes to that part, is it possible to tap this thing out?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. And I think we're starting to see it a little bit. What's going to be really fascinating is how the people who are placing their bets on it vertically integrate into it. So Sinclair Group, for example, just bought all the Fox RSNs. Sinclair Group is known as being a extremely tough negotiator. But they now own that. They own the news. They own content across the board, right? And, you know, as you see people starting to overpay for the content that they believe is that valuable, you see other pieces of content which are seemingly struggling. The ACC network isn't on the greatest footing right now. The Pac-12 is a complete tire fire, which we've talked about a number of times. So I think you can tap out on the non-premium brands, and I think that's going to hurt the future, but I don't think anybody that's in charge of it right now cares. The biggest problem we have in sports business across the board is you have this entire generation is maximizing and squeezing everything they can for the next 5 to 10 years, not paying attention to the fact that, yeah, Samsung's running the deck at the game, but you don't have 12-year-olds at the game that paid $2.50 to get there like I was.
Right.
And you already see it like in the college bowl system, right? You know, specific bowls dominate and other bowls are just sound stages so that they can get a 4.6 rating on ESPN.
Right.
And we're headed that direction. So you can completely tap out the have-nots and you just create this small, you know, grouping of haves, and then, you know, where does a medium-sized buyer go?
Right,
and then, in 10 to 20 years, who knows if they're even here? You know, I watched Bob Bowman speak a couple of years ago when he was in charge of MLB Advanced Media, and he said, you know, what we would take a lot of pride at in 1950, whatever, boxing, horse racing, and baseball were the top three sports, and we're still
one
of them now. And I kind of thought, well, maybe, right? You might still be one of them now. But who knows? Like, is football, is the NFL, is, you know, Major League Baseball, is the NBA going to go the way of boxing and horse racing?
Yeah. You paid $2.50 a candlestick. I paid $2 at Fenway.
Yep.
For my bleacher seat. Which brings me now to, I'll give you an example, Pittsburgh. Pirates attendance is down, and they're not a good team. And not only are they not a good team, they are not entertaining. And it hurts me to say that because I personally, the president of the club, Frank Coonley, I consider him a friend. When you're not actively going for it, to me the problem you run into, Tony, is the fans then vote. And the way they vote is by not going.
One of the problems you have there is so Thomas Tolle, one of the owners of the Pirates or of the Steelers, he's trying to buy the Pirates. I coach the kids out here in basketball. You have this is what they're dealing with on the team side right now, because you can always go through a process like Philly did and have 5 years of terrible teams, and then you're good and you sell out. And everybody who's in charge, when that happens, you know, that tide rises their boat. So in our industry, it's a very small industry for the listeners who, you know, might have some interest in it. If you happen to be working at the Cleveland Cavaliers when LeBron James showed up the first time, there was a group of about 18 people there who were all really impressive people, but their career skipped three levels because they were there when they built that experience. And the same thing happens at a lot of these teams as they get good and bad. And that's really all they're incentivized to do. So they're not incentivized to sit and look, as you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates, to sit and look at the community and say, hey, are we really setting up for having fans here in 20 years? Are we really setting up for the next generation, or are we just trying to make sure that we're stemming the bleeding as much as we can right now? And that goes all the way back to what we were talking about with Major League Baseball, is you know, Major League Baseball has two really big problems right now. One, everybody has figured out that there's haves and have-nots,
yep.
right? And the other thing is everybody's figured out that young players rule the day, but the collective bargaining agreement pays players when they get older.
Yep.
So, like, Cody Bellinger is 24 years old. He's making $550,000 a year. By the time he's supposed to cash in, there's just going to be another Cody Bellinger.
And they will cite, and they cite analytics saying that anybody that's 33 or older doesn't perform at a high enough level. So they want younger
exactly.
players performing at a higher level based on analytics.
And the CBA is completely flipped the opposite direction.
That's exactly right.
So you're better off tanking for 3 years. I mean, what gets lost on this is, and the sports fans know this, we watch it, the Cubs tanked for years before they won.
No doubt.
The Royals tanked for years. The Astros tanked for years. And this isn't one or two teams where this has happened. This has happened now for the majority of the world champions. Right? I mean, the Dodgers didn't really tank, but, I mean, they're the modern-day Buffalo Bills right now. I had to say it. I'm a Giants fan. I had to throw it out there. But
it must have therapeutically felt good.
It is. It is.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, the Philadelphia 76ers in their own backyard, they were very open about it. Right? Now they're actually very good. They aren't great, but they're very good. Okay.
But the thing is, so they just tanked for how long, right? I mean, a decade. And they collected a bunch of assets. And they made a run. And they were okay last year. And now you're starting to build a fan base. And then they were pretty good this year, and you're building a fan base. And now what? Now they've got two free agents who are up for big max deals. Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris are both going to make big dollars,
right?
And they can't afford them. And the shooting guard, Redick, is also a free agent.
Yeah.
So you're way over the cap, and you spent 10 years building a team that you got to take a run at for 3 years, and now you're in this repeater tax. If you go into next season, it's just, man, I do not envy the fact that they have to try to figure this out, because the other way to do it is to just say, forget it, eliminate, you know, payroll. Eliminate the salary cap, and then we turn into European soccer where you have the same five teams every year.
Right, every year, same five over and over again. Daniel Kaplan on The Athletic wrote a thoughtful article today about a cashless Super Bowl and Wimbledon being cashless. Mm-hmm. In other words, don't bother bringing currency to the venue. They'll take plastic or they'll off your phone your debit. And it looks like the Falcons are going to do it. Atlanta United's going to do it. Tampa Bay Rays are doing it. And Tottenham is doing it in their brand new mega stadium. Is that the trend that you expect to see as time goes, that it's going to become cashless venues along with kiosks for gambling at the venues?
Mm-hmm. It's going to move so much faster than the fan thinks it's going to move towards, first of all, being totally cashless and totally paperless. We're there. The technology exists. It's been tested. It works. People are doing it all over Europe right now. A lot of the European teams, especially in the English Premier League, have been using RFID or, you know, tap to pay for years. And the reason they do it is two things. One, they want to know who you are, right? They're going to make the argument that this is about security and it's about, you know, ease of use and convenience, and that's all well and good, but that's not what it's about. They want to know who you are because they want to sell you more potato chips. They want to sell you jerseys afterwards, and they want to, you know, that's what they're trying to do. And they're trying to trade you convenience for this, and that convenience means you're going to buy more beer. Because imagine a world where you don't have to wait in line to buy a beer because you don't have to wait for people to pay. You literally walk up, take one, scan your phone the way you would scan it onto a boarding pass for a plane, and walk away with your beer. And you could legitimately, you know, Ticketmaster's presence system, they're the first ones doing this, but a lot of people are right behind them. I could walk up, and if you were an usher at the stadium during the Michigan game, and I've got three beers in my hands and two hot dogs, I don't even have to pull my ticket out. Just because I'm standing in front of you, you could pull your phone out and say, hello, Mr. Knopf, your seat's right down there. So these things are not just here. They're coming a lot faster than everybody thinks. Cashless will be the norm. And then a few municipalities are trying to legislate against it, saying that it's ageist. There's another word for it, but it's basically ageist. That, you know, there's a population that's not cashless and doesn't ever want to be cashless, and they don't feel secure
doing that. They're not savvy enough technology-wise,
Right. But they're losing that battle all over. So this battle's already happening in New York City on the consumer side. So there's a lot of restaurants that are cashless now, especially QSRs. And this has already been legislated, and they've sided on the side of cashless is civil. You can do it. So the only thing that would stop that from happening when you're talking about a professional team or a college team is a lot of those venues actually have municipalities that have invested in them. So yep. they use the bond measure to pay for the stadium. And they're going to try to use that argument that, well, you have to look out for the citizenship because they actually put this together. I don't think it's going to hold up.
No, I don't think so either. Pebble Beach, a huge corporate success?
It was okay. The weather wasn't very good. So you lost a little bit there.
Yeah.
But, they generally do better. The corporations, believe it or not, you and I would rather be at Pebble Beach, but they'd rather be in the big market. So Wingfoot will do better next year than Pebble Beach this year.
Yeah, they'd rather be at Bethpage Black. They'd rather be at Wingfoot.
I mean, right.
They love the U.S. The corporate people love the New York City feel.
Love it. And they love the idea of being in that time zone. The Midwest does okay. When they stick around Chicago, they do pretty well. But, the West Coast bias doesn't just exist in, quote-unquote, the media. It exists on the corporate spend as well. A lot of people spend money out here. Silicon Valley in particular does very well. But when you're talking about national events, the exposure is just bigger, stronger. The ticket price is higher. Sponsorship dollars are higher, all when it's, on the East Coast.
Yet the ratings are off the chart because you had primetime television golf.
Always.
Yeah, you're not going to get primetime television golf at Wingfoot.
No, you're not. So the TV numbers do better, but the corporations don't really. The only way the corporations care about the TV numbers is when they're, throwing a logo on a bag or when they're advertising during the actual event. When you're actually taking somebody to the event, they prefer to be back there.
So Victor Hovland, having Oklahoma State on his bag, did nothing for the corporate people.
And he's not going to have Oklahoma State on his bag as of yesterday. I think he probably declared he was pro, right?
Absolutely. He's going to Cromwell, Connecticut, and the Travelers. And guess what? There'll be no Oklahoma State on his bag this week.
Oklahoma State. Yeah, he's going to have a shiny new bag with a shiny new logo on it. I guarantee that.
Shocking. Tony, believe it or not, a half hour's up. It flies by because there's a lot of interesting topics to talk about. As always, you handle them perfectly.
I had one thing I desperately wanted to get your opinion on, because we're out of time. I've got to bring it up. But
go ahead.
Refreshing is it to watch the Women's World Cup and not see world-class football players flopping all over the field? I would love to see an analysis of how few dives there are in the Women's World Cup versus the men's. It's fantastic.
It's ball movement, there's flow, and the only time somebody goes down is if there's a legitimate tackle and a play in the ball.
It's amazing. The men need to take notes. It's so much more fun to watch.
And I talk about this in basketball all the time. And you know what? The last month of the season, you had guys flopping, and it wasn't getting called.
Yeah.
See, I'm of the opinion in college basketball that the first 2 weeks of the season, anybody who flops, you get a technical.
I wish they would do it that way. The flopping is killing all sports. I mean, you're a 200-something-pound, beast. I couldn't knock you over with a running start, and now all of a sudden you look like you got shot because somebody, clipped you with a cleat. Come on.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a finely conditioned, well-tuned athlete, and it just took that to do that?
It drives me nuts.
Tony, thanks so much. I look forward to our next conversation very, very much.
All right, my friend.
Thanks. Tony Knopp. Wow, that was some half hour. We covered a lot of ground.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.